Vern Rayburn breaks his long silence on what went wrong with Eclipse Aviation and what went right. I'm Paul Plagg, and this is Aero News. Welcome in to the Aero News special feature, and thanks for downloading us today. We had intended to bring you the first of several excerpts from the congressional testimony of the crew of U.S. Airways Flight 1549 today. That series has now been reset to start on Tuesday, March 10th. Since the first day of EAA AirVenture 2008, when he was very publicly deposed at a morning news conference, Eclipse Aviation founder and CEO Vern Rayburn has been uncharacteristically absent from the news. When what's left of the company moved from Chapter 11 reorganization to a proposed Chapter 7 liquidation, Rayburn agreed to talk at length with ANN Editor-in-Chief Jim Campbell about the good, the bad, and the lessons learned in the process of pioneering the very light jet. This very in-depth interview has been edited for release in four parts. Today, in part one, an assessment of the immediate future of Eclipse that you might find surprising.
Well, I think that it's still a little bit premature to predict or forecast exactly what the future is going to be. But I think in a reasonably ironic sort of way, Eclipse actually probably has a better shot at a future life right now than it's had in the last 3 or 4 months. By that I mean, I believe there's a hearing scheduled for Wednesday of this week. The Chapter 11 bankruptcy process will be converted to a Chapter 7. Now, in the court system, 11 is the whole impetus of the law is to try to keep the company a going concern, try to keep the company, you know, moving back out and, you know, going forward. Under 7, all that changes, and it's purely sell the bones, you know, sell what's left over. The reason, though, I say I think that's good for the company is the 11 sales process. When the company filed for reorganization back just before Thanksgiving last year, and then also filed simultaneously to do a 363 sale, which is kind of a current form of a pre-pack Chapter 11, the odds were stacked against any legitimate new bidder really emerging. Now, there's no statement here that it was illegal. There's no statement that there was collusion or insider dealing. But the simple fact of the matter is the company and the stalking horse bidder, which was eTurk Aviation and Ruhl Pieper, were insiders, and they kind of wrote the rules. So nothing was done that wasn't within the law. But I think as any experienced businessman learns fairly at some point in their career, the law is not about the truth or right. The law is just a set of rules, and if you can stack the rules in your favor, good on you. That just means you got good lawyers and you were being fairly clever. But the simple reality, the effect of that was, is that the potential or the ability for a legitimate, you know, competing bid for Eclipse under the 363 sale was almost preordained that it wouldn't happen. And I think history supports that thesis. Unfortunately, once the sale was awarded to eTurk Aviation, and then eTurk was unable to fulfill the obligations that they committed to the court and to the creditors, both secured and unsecured, that they would go through with the purchase, what that's done is now forced the company into, in essence, not a going concern type of situation. And so now eTurk's out of the picture, or if they want to be in the picture, they have to. They truly are competing finally on an equal basis. And I think what that's done is it's opened up the possibility for other groups to come in and say, look, we believe there's value here and we want to pick that up. And, you know, there's been at least two groups announced, and I suspect there'll be a few more. There's been at least two groups announced that they expect or they are going to try to buy, in one case, some part of the company, in another case, all of the company. And so you've got kind of two paths starting to emerge. But, you know, one group of people wants to put the airplane back into production. They're going to change the business model, but they're going to ultimately put the aircraft back into production. Another group is more interested in getting hold of whatever it takes to support the existing fleet of nearly 260 aircraft. And so they have a slightly different objective. But in both cases, what you see are people willing to put capital and effort and time into keeping the breed, if you will, the type of aircraft alive. In one case, supporting just what's out there. In another case, actually ultimately growing the fleet again. And so I'm guardedly optimistic that there is now a future for Eclipse, whereas I think it was becoming pretty clear to all observers that the likelihood of ETERC going through with what they had promised to was de minimis. And so I actually have, some guarded optimism right now, and exactly how it's going to work out, well, that's yet to be determined.
From what I could see, there was promise after promise after promise. As a matter of fact, when the original offer and situation was set up between ETERC and the bankruptcy court, from what I understand, he pretty much asserted that he had the money, he was ready to go. Did he?
Well, as I understand, and I have not personally read the transcripts, but they have been read to me, is that Rule absolutely on the witness stand testified that he had the funds and they were not encumbered in any shape, form, or fashion, and he was capable of closing. And if you go through the timeline, he had 5 days post the company meeting the closing conditions, which the company did on January 23rd, which was the day that he was awarded the sale. And so he was theoretically supposed to close. ETERC was supposed to close by January 28th. If there's a heinous action here, it's that by not closing on the 28th of January, in essence, and keeping the company running pretty much at full tilt, I mean, they still had 800-plus employees, almost 850 employees, what the company did is ran through the very last of its financing, so that on Tuesday of last week, basically a week ago, they had no choice but to lay off everybody because there simply wasn't any cash left. Perhaps if on January 28th, ETERC had said, we're not going to be able to close and we'll step back from the 363 award, the process that's starting to occur now could have occurred much more rapidly, and perhaps not all those people would have lost their job. Maybe the company could have gone into survival mode and lasted another 2 or even 3 months, and during that period been able to sell the company out of Chapter 11 as opposed to out of Chapter 7. That's speculation on my part. I want to label it as such because I just want to be very accurate in this discussion, but clearly there was a month wasted, and if the court documents that were filed last week are any indication, there was another $4 or $5 million worth of money that was effectively spent in anticipation of ETERC buying the company and going forward with the business plan that they had presented. So that's the part that is very difficult to swallow. That's the part that's very difficult to understand how it got to there. But I think we're dealing with the reality of it is what it is, and now the company's about to be in Chapter 7, and it's a very different process, which will take, by the way, a period of time. It's non-deterministic, but essentially the trustee of Chapter 7 is chartered with getting the maximum amount of money, revenue, from the sale of the assets of the companies to pay off the secured creditors. And that usually takes more than a couple of weeks. It typically takes more like 2 to 3 months would be doing it pretty fast.
I see. Ouch. And that doesn't leave those who are hoping to reclaim their jobs in much of a position, does it?
Well, it just puts everybody from, vendors to current owners who are trying to keep their aircraft airworthy and need service or need parts to employees. It just keeps everybody in a form of painful suspended animation for another period of time, because even after the sale of under Chapter 7 is concluded, there's still going to be a period of time when the new owners, whoever successfully bids on the assets, is going to have to go through a startup period. So that's the bad news, is the next minimally 60 days, and probably realistic, maybe as much as 120 days, are going to be a really, really tough period for all the various stakeholders in Eclipse Aviation.
In a moment, what went wrong and what went right for Eclipse Aviation? We'll be back for more with ANN's Jim Campbell and former Eclipse CEO Vern Rayburn. I'm Paul Plack, and you're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
Uncramp your style in a new Citation CJ2 Plus from Cessna. Now with integrated ProLine 21 avionics, FADEC, and a restyled cockpit and cabin. In the CJ2 Plus, you'll carry more payload than you could in the original CJ2. You'll climb and cruise faster. You'll have the freedom to use even shorter runways, and you'll do it all on less fuel. For a sure thing, call 1-800-4-CESSNA.
Diamond's DA-42 Twin Star is General Aviation's ultimate flying machine. Fly fast with the confidence of a twin for the cost of a single. Go direct over water or rugged terrain and cover great distances in the first and only piston aircraft with an advanced airframe, avionics, and engines. The DA-42 gives you options you've never had before, including the Garmin G1000 and no ice protection. Go where you want, when you want, fast and for less. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3220.
Welcome back to the Aero News Special Feature. I'm Paul Platt. ANN Editor-in-Chief Jim Campbell is talking with Eclipse Aviation founder and former CEO Vern Rayburn about the lessons learned in his years leading the company.
You put over a decade of your life into this. I can't imagine the pain that you must have in seeing what has come of all this at this point. But let's ask the big question. It's the very simple, short question that will probably never have a complete answer because it just takes too long. What went wrong and what went right in the Eclipse Aviation saga?
Well, as you say, that's a very simple set of questions, and it's a very, very, very long and complex set of answers. And obviously, especially over the last 6 months or so, I've spent a lot of time thinking about that once you know, kind of out of the fray. And I think there's a lot of things that went very right. Now, there's, of course, a tremendous number of critics out there who are now pounding their chest and saying, see, I told you so, just because they are people that do things like that. And, in fact, the majority of those critics are people who basically don't work for a living. They're just... They're editors. They're people that that don't really actually contribute any value. And in fact, you know, there's a great quote from Teddy Roosevelt that, you know, I take a fair amount of comfort in. And it goes real simple. It says the man who really counts in the world is the doer, not the mere critic. The man who actually does the work, even if roughly and imperfectly, not the man who only talks or writes about how it ought to be done. And by the way, he said that back in 1891. So, you know, there's been some truths that have existed for a long, long, long time, and we're just seeing them repeated. And so they're unwilling to acknowledge an awful lot of good things that happened. I mean, the list is fairly long, ranging from Eclipse truly did start a whole new segment of an industry. Okay, well, some people say, well, that's not true. It exists for. And that's just revisionism and frankly, gross misrepresentation to the point of, frankly, a lie. The whole VLJ phenomenon, although it has been a tough road to hoe, is clearly changing this industry and exactly one of the missions that Eclipse set out to do, which was to change the value proposition of aircraft, especially in the transportation end of the industry, has clearly occurred. Now, you know, unbridled or unchecked now or uncontested, I'm fearful about what's going to happen to pricing at this end of the business, but, you know, that's another thing we should see. The other thing I think that's happened is probably the ultimate real personification of the VLJs are going to be the single-engine jets. And I'm very optimistic about what you're going to see in that sector because there's some great airplanes out there. Personally, I thought the Eclipse 400 was the greatest. What happens to that is a whole other story right now that no one knows what's going to happen to that. But the efforts at Cirrus and at Piper and especially at Diamond, I think, are really going to define a whole new category of aircraft. And for anyone to say that's not true, they're just trying to take a position because they want to take a position. So from an industry standpoint, we created a whole new market segment that I think is going to be an enduring segment. From an innovation standpoint, there were a lot of things at Eclipse that were very, very, very innovative, ranging from, you know, pioneering the friction stir welding process, which now a lot of other companies are starting to investigate and consider, to things like, you know, the first aircraft with a truly digital electrical system. And by the way, I'd observe, one, there's never been an electrical system failure in any Eclipse from flight test on down. And most aircraft can't make that statement. But we designed an aircraft electrical system that was a 10 to the minus 9th reliability. It's proving to be exactly that reliability. And, oh, by the way, things that we pioneered like electronic circuit breakers, which, of course, you know, the same experts who are crowing today, said 8 years ago when we first announced that, you can't do that. You're just a stupid computer geek that doesn't understand how airplanes really work. You need real circuit breakers. Well, Bombardier is going to implement a full electronic circuit breaker digital system. In fact, the design statement is make it like the Eclipse in the new Lear 85. Two other innovations that were rewarded, recognized, probably a better way to phrase it, by, you know, things, little people like the Environmental Protection Agency with Fostrex, to some of the manufacturing technology. And there's just a really long list, all electric actuators, all digital control systems that have all gone to produce, and this is the part that I'm most proud of, a really, 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 really great airplane. Now, once again, people will always say, oh, it's just an airplane. Eh, who cares? But you talk to the people who own the airplane, you talk to the people who fly the airplane, and you find universally the aircraft is loved and admired and respected because it is unique in both its ability to fly, its ease of flying, the way the systems are managed, and most fundamentally and most importantly, this is the safest aircraft that's been introduced into the fleet in decades. Again, all the experts said, oh, this is the next Doctor Killer, of course referring to, you know, the VTOL bonanza. And the simple fact is we said, no, we think there's a different way to do this. We think there's a different way to do this all the way from how the aircraft's designed, to how it's operated, to really fundamentally how it's how people are trained and how the aircraft's operated. And every time we've had a problem, and we've had a couple of problems on the Eclipse fleet, you know, the infamous tire problem, the extremely infamous and massively misreported and phenomenally misrepresented throttle fault problem at Midway Airport on early Eclipse, this aircraft has never had a fatal accident. This aircraft has never had a serious accident. And it's already accumulated, even now that the fleet has stopped growing, it's already accumulated more than twice the flight hours of its nearest competitor, the Cessna Mustang. And the Mustangs had already an exact identical accident to the one accident that the Eclipse had. And oh, by the way, they had it a little bit sooner. So I'm extremely proud that we were able to deliver on the promise and the vision of a very, very easy to operate, very, very well-trained fleet of pilots and a very, very safe airplane. So those are just some of the list of things that we're able to do. I think we pioneered some new training ideas. Our customers absolutely love the upset training. Another one of those things that was labeled the Circus Act by, again, some so-called experts. And yet every single customer has come out saying, I'm a better pilot today because I went through that course that you made me go through. So those are all the, I could go on for a long time, but as you said, we want to try to make this a short answer.
When we resume the conversation in part two, what went wrong at Eclipse? No punches pulled, but you don't have to wait till tomorrow. That download is available now, as are parts three and four. Jim Campbell is ANN's editor-in-chief. Vern Rayburn is the founder and former CEO of Eclipse Aviation. You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.